First, there's so much out there on the internet. It's hard to talk about internet culture. Instead, there are a zillion different internet cultures, each with their own unique themes and languages, and it can be hard to keep track of it all. Our next guest is exploring some of those cultures and themes in a new online series that covers everything that's weird, wrong, and totally sad about internet culture. Amanda Hess is a David Carr Fellow at the New York Times and writes about internet culture. She produces a video series called Interneting with Amanda Hess. Amanda, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, as I start to think about it and watch your pieces, I realize, you know, I spend probably too much time on the internet, and yet there's probably 98% of what's out there that I have no idea what other people are doing or they're into.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly have the same experience. One of the videos that I made came from a tip that I got from a 12-year-old girl. So, you know, I too, like, I can't find all this stuff searching myself because I'm in my own little bubble as well.
Right, and even if we want to find different things, the internet, social media, filters, they give us the things that they think we want. So it's really, in some ways, hard to discover what maybe a different generation or different community is looking at.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how, you know, even the people who we consider to be celebrities in different micro generations are turning out to be not only different people, but people who do, like, completely different things on different platforms. So it's really creating a sort of, like, not just, we talk a lot about the political divide that these filter bubbles create, but it also creates this very cultural divide between people from different countries, different parts of the country, and especially different age groups.
Yeah, we talked about that Logan Paul story earlier, the famous YouTuber, famous among a select community, and who?
Right.
To a lot of other people.
Yeah, I'm somewhere in the middle between those two groups, I think.
So that takes us to interneting. What are you trying to do with this online series?
So I read about internet culture, or as you mentioned, internet cultures for the New York Times, and that means that I'm making a product that usually ends up in a newspaper, which is you know, a non-online format. I'm writing an essay that's like 1,000 words, and with the video series, what we're really trying to do is to bring, like, my insights and my analysis of the internet into a form that is, like, internet native itself. So analyze the internet with the images of the internet, in the language of the internet. And so I teamed up with our wonderful video team to start this series. It's called Interneting.
And I want to dig into one of the videos that I probably should have known more about the content, given that I'm a parent, but I didn't. Beauty apps, where people take their selfies, they can buy an app and change them in a zillion different ways. Can you talk about what people can do with their selfies?
Yeah, so this is the video that started out as a 12-year-old girl's idea. She's the daughter of a colleague, and she was taken aback when she found that an app that, again, this is very popular among young girls, but something that maybe adults have never heard of, called Musical.ly, where you lip sync to songs and post videos of them. All of a sudden, this new button appeared on the homepage that is a beauty filter. So with literally like the tap of a button, it basically gives you like a kind of photoshopped, like, facelift kind of thing. And she, you know, even at 12 years old, was disturbed by this idea because so easily and quickly, even though it's an option, that option changes the whole landscape of the expectations of how you're supposed to look on this app. So it's really spreading everywhere, but there are a bunch of different apps. Like, I downloaded maybe 20 when I was trying them out, and they're really, really popular in China, which says to me that, you know, more of them may be popular in the U.S. soon. And even though there are so many of them, there are some real trends that you can see in the types of appearances and aesthetics that are being engineered and programmed into the apps. So
right.
A lot of them try to make you look whiter. Most of them try to make you look thinner, definitely youthful, super feminine. So all of these beauty standards that we sort of know that society is transmitting to us in some way are being very, you know, literally programmed into these apps.
Right. And we've heard people talk for years about how, you know, maybe a fashion magazine or a TV ad is creating these specific standards of beauty, standards that might be hard to meet for a lot of people, problematic in a lot of ways. How does it change things when people get to change, young girls in particular, are changing their own faces according to whatever this app's algorithm says is prettier?
Well, I think one thing that's different is when a magazine photoshops a celebrity, there's sort of a locus of responsibility that somebody can go to complain. So several years ago, I remember there were a bunch of campaigns, some of them again started by teenage girls, asking magazines to not Photoshop models and celebrities, and there were editors of these magazines who could be held to account for that. When this stuff is programmed into apps, you know, a lot of times when somebody's using Facebook or, you know, Musical.ly or one of these Chinese beauty apps like Meitu, especially if they're a younger user or somebody who has never really thought about how the internet gets made, it seems almost like inevitable and natural that these things are happening. You don't sort of like know who's encoding these standards, even if you wanted to complain about them. So I think it definitely integrates them more seamlessly into our lives.
We're talking to Amanda Hess from the New York Times, a creator of the Internetting series, a video series at the New York Times. And Amanda, you write or say in this particular video that the internet and social media creates this rewards network. I put a thing up there, I'm rewarded based on the amount of attention I get. So there's, in the cases of these apps, an incentive for me to be as pretty or cool looking or whatever as I can to get those responses.
Yeah, that's one of the sort of, I think, more disquieting things to me is that, you know, it's not just about looking your best or, you know, trying to feel good about yourself. It's about trying to get a response from your friends, which then sort of like encodes a standard for them. So with Musical.ly, you know, if one person starts using the beauty filter app, it feels like they have this sort of advantage or standard that is then re-encoded by everybody else. So it's really sort of like it's a different situation than when we can point to a fashion editor. We have to point towards all, you know, every million person who is doing this themselves. So it makes it a lot harder to tackle.
And we've been focusing on just one of a handful of internetting videos. I want to peek at another one in our last few minutes, one on political memes. And this is another case where if you've presented yourself as a Democrat on the internet, you probably saw a lot of positive Hillary Clinton memes, anti-Donald Trump memes. Flip things around, you saw a lot of pro-Donald Trump, anti-Hillary Clinton. You probably never saw the other category in a lot of cases. These are two different worlds.
Right, that's true. And, you know, I know it's been a long time since the campaign. I can't even imagine what we're going to be dealing with in 2020 and what sort of technology is going to be used for this stuff. But one of the things that I found really interesting, sort of revisiting those political memes from the campaign, is the way in which creating a meme about the candidate makes you almost feel like you are a part of their campaign, like you're like some sort of campaign volunteer or are like building their online persona yourself. So it's not just what Hillary Clinton's saying, but what your, you know, the filter that you're putting on it after she says it to make her look stupid or to make her look like a glorious feminist goddess or whatever. And so that really like re-encodes people's feeling of investment and personal interaction with these politicians, even if you know, it's a bit of a fantasy.
Well, is it maybe a good thing, though? There's a concern people are disengaged from politics, detached from it. If with this level of personal involvement, even if it's just making a meme, is there a positive there?
I mean, you could argue that there's a positive, but the theme of my video series is that the internet is fundamentally, you know, a force for negativity. I think the negative thing that happens is that when, you know, obviously, you know, this is something that we've seen before the internet, but the internet sort of works in the same vein in similar ways, is that the candidates become, you know, not people who are there to advocate for us and to hold to account, but instead these sort of like godlike character figures that we're constructing to say things that they really haven't said and represent things that they really don't represent. And I think there's something, you know, even if you can see the benefit of the participation, that there's something sort of fundamentally anti-democratic about that, that theme.
Big picture, if you weigh all the good and the bad of the internet, do you, Amanda, ultimately personally come out pessimistic about what the internet is doing to us?
You know, a few years ago when I started writing about the internet, I was very Pollyanna-ish about it, and a lot of my pieces would be sort of highlighting the positive things about it, especially when people would sort of come out with, you know, scare tactic-y stories about it, and that sort of has developed into like more of a cynicism and a negativity in recent years. It might turn back the other way again, and maybe it's just that I'm getting older. But I also just find that, like, you know, there are really big, powerful companies that are behind these internet cultures that we all participate in, and they deserve to be, you know, scrutinized and held to account. So there's a reason for focusing on the negative, I think.
Is there agency? Do we, just in our last few moments, do we have the power to maybe tip the balance back?
I think that's more of a question for our legislators, actually. I mean, part of the problem is that there are these huge companies that, you know, Google and Facebook have, like, what is now sort of considered an ad duopoly on the internet. So I don't think we can do it ourselves, but through collective political action, possibly.
Amanda, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Amanda Hess is a David Carr Fellow at the New York Times writing about internet culture. She joined us to talk about her video series. It's called Interneting with Amanda Hess.